just to summarize a little bit about what you were saying, to go back to the when the European Free Trade Agreement came in, was this a big turning point, do you think?
Yeah, I think if you look back at the history since the founding of the state and the protectionism that was carried out by the Irish Republic, around the 60s and 70s, you would have had the Whittaker Plan and all that type of stuff, Sean, the mass modernisation. And once they took away the tariffs, once the protection was gone, all these old type of industries couldn't function with outside competition. Right?
Okay.
In a sense, it was the precursor of globalisation, what we have today. And lots of places, like you see it, all the traditional places, Jacobs, all these old factories, industries, once the protection was gone, the tariffs were gone, they couldn't compete and they were undermined by imports. So they had to modernise, they had to rationalise. And
but this was the free trade agreement. We had agreed to
that's, if you like, that's capitalism, that's the way it develops. Somebody always does it cheaper somewhere else and you have to respond if they're into
it. But a lot of
market.
People would say that it was the unions that actually brought down a lot of these businesses.
No. The unions fought within the context of the time to get the best for the membership, right? But the unions didn't bring about, I should say, the general overall economic climate in which companies were competing. Unions are only concerned with their own individual members. They don't have this overarching, strategy. Maybe they should have, I don't know. But no. Now, there would have been practices that were there from olden times that did want to be eliminated. There's another, what they call demarcation issues. No, that's my job. One tradesman can use a screwdriver, but the other fella can't. I only work on plastic. Or if you wanted a job done, somebody had to drill the wall, and then you had to get an electrician to put the wire in.
But surely that was ridiculous, wasn't it?
It was ridiculous, but these were people's livelihoods. If you go back through history, that's where guilds came from. People had to protect their livelihoods. What's an accountant? What's a solicitor? They're all protected professions and industries.
But it was the same thing. It was that regime and strong restrictions that caused an awful lot of the internal problems.
They would have caused internal problems, but what would have happened is if you don't have trade unions, if workers would have had no protection, we would still be on 60-hour weeks, children would be still working down the mines. But you didn't have trade unions.
But people had work. It seemed to me like a fair system, but the union seemed to target an awful lot of the companies that the government had. I'm just thinking of CIE were always seemed to be on strike, and the buses were always seemed to be.
But there's a different case where you have state companies and state monopolies. For political expediency, the government is not going to. It is nowadays, but in those times, it didn't want to have trouble, and the Labour Party got a lot of votes from the state companies as well, and they could afford it because there was no competition to them. They were monopolies, and they were subsidised out the public purse, just subsidising. But private industry couldn't be subsidised. It just fell victim to the winds of change. And within that, unions had to try and ameliorate the damage.
In hindsight, looking back at the mills, was there anything at all that you would change if you could?
Yes, as I would not have told Miley Spate that it was a good deal, because what was going to happen was there was a day of action called by the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, and there was going to be a big rally and a meeting in O'Connell Street, and I was going to speak at it, and I was going to call for a national strike. And there was quite a strong possibility you would have got it. And it could have been a really, really big political issue. It's hard to think now, but the groundswell of support, and people coming from all around the country supporting us, we were famous, I was on the radio, I was in the papers,
But Paul, would it have made a difference? Would it have made a difference? I mean, would the factory really have survived?
Well, maybe not in the end, but if you'd got the principle established that workers are entitled to a livelihood, somebody is responsible if you shut down one place to find alternative employment. But we were just being fobbed off with all sorts of excuses. It was dragged out till they got the materials out, they got their stock sold. Then, the problem with the selling the property, the government can't buy it. Then eventually when they bought it, we can't get anybody to come into it. And in the end, it took the hunger strike, the threat of the hunger strike, which could have brought down the government.
Yeah.
They could have had a general strike. That forced them to do the deal with these Canadians.
So it seems to me that you were fighting more for the cause than for the restarting of the company again.
Yeah, because there was a principle involved. Even today, I don't agree with redundancy money. I don't think people have the right to sell a job. I don't see why you should be entitled to get a payment because your job is gone. You should be fighting to keep the job so someone else can have it. But as I was a political-minded person and I had a broader picture, and I was quite proud of the 2 years I spent practically every day of my life down to the glue pot to run that campaign. Not on my own, any of that. Jerry Courtney and Miley Spate and John O'Keefe and others. But I put my family life on hold. My wife supported me. I had two young kids myself. I was blacklisted afterwards. Even people who weren't involved in the occupation were blacklisted. Once you mentioned you worked in Clondalkin and paper mills, employers would run away from you. Because they were all tarred with the same brush. We're all mad militants, you know. So I didn't work for 10 years from 84. When it closed again, the winter of 84, I didn't work again until 1996. I got a part-time job.
Oh, why?
Because I was blacklisted. I mean, I ended up going into community work. I got trained up and I finished up as a manager of community projects.
Were you ever tempted to actually join a party at any stage?
Oh, I would have if it was one that I thought were genuine enough. But my view now on most, if not all, political parties is that they become a machine. You have a bureaucracy and it has its own momentum, its own life, its own institutional kind of imperative. And those that are like Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Labour, the established parties, they are just playing around with the system at the moment. They don't want to change anything. The others that come into the system, like Sinn Féin recently, or the Workers' Party, or whoever it is at the minute, once they get into the parliamentary system, they're swallowed up. You can't change it. So I'm a bit cynical about, very pessimistic about change from the parliamentary point. You know?
I see. And do you think that the Workers' Party, that there isn't, Labour are no longer the Workers' Party?
Jesus, no. No, Labour haven't been a Workers' Party, I suppose, I don't know, since the 30s or 40s, since they turned their back on the national struggle, when they were originally Socialist Republicans, since Connolly's time. Labour have a niche in the Irish setup, and I struggled for a long time to see where they came from, and they had a lot of rural TDs.
Yes.
And eventually somebody explained to me that it was because there were a lot of these state companies, Bord na Mona and such like, that were set up with the new Free State, right? That had a lot of workers in them. And the Labour got a base there from unionised workers.
Yes.
And that's, you have families, the Spring family and so on. So they have a little niche there. Now, I think their niche is more or less a kind of a liberal middle-class element. You see a lot of solicitors and such like professors and intelligentsia. You don't see too many workers in Labour at the moment. Most of the workers today are probably with Sinn Féin. And they were with Fianna Fáil, but they've probably gone to Sinn Féin at this stage.
Right. Paul, it's been a pleasure talking to you, but tell me, the paper mills was a huge part in your life, wasn't it?
It was. I look back and it was probably my proudest moment. So I felt there was a challenge there, and I had no education. I left school at 14. I think I had a primary cert, but I found myself quite capable of being able to organise and lead to a large extent, be on deputations, produce statements, negotiated. I remember we went to a meeting with Charlie Haughey, and when we got into the room, he made his opening remarks, and then Peter Keating, the union official, responded to him, and he says, "Oh, are you Paul Billings?" He said. So obviously they had a file on me, but so I was happy enough. I did my stint for 2 years for the cause, if you like. So that can't be taken away from me.
Yeah. Paul Billings, thank you. Thank you very much.